Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Barry for the appellants. May it please the court. Today, I'm here on a case on behalf of four plaintiff appellants in a Fair Labor Standards Act case that was dismissed by the district court. We're alleging principally two types of errors. One, that the individual four officers were still within the statute of limitations based on the record in the case that was before the court. In addition, we're alleging two issues of equity, one of estoppel and one of tolling. We believe that in this case the court erred. Well, first I'll say that this is de novo review. We believe that the appellate court is in the same position as the district court is to review this case, and we believe that the statute of limitations issue is clear to us, at least with respect to part of the plaintiff's claims. The complaint was filed on November 5th, 2007. It's clear that the claims from the record continued to at least exist between November 5th, 2004 to the filing of the complaint. We believe it goes back further for the
district court dismissed those as well then?
Yes, Your Honor.
Including the previous 3 years from the date of the complaint?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it was in page in the court's opinion, it was on page 8 of the court's opinion where they said that even if plaintiffs are correct that they served as detective sergeants, it is apparent from the record that they did so before December 12, 2003 when they filed a grievance seeking compensation pursuant to DC Code 5-543.02C. And in the record, in the affidavits, that are in the record at JA 139 to 166. In the pay studies that were completed by MPD at the same time that they were claiming that the detective sergeant position didn't exist, it shows that all of the four plaintiff appellants continue to work during either the 2 and 3 year statute of limitations. And also most important in the record also for all of my arguments are three of the DC personnel, DC Form 1 personnel retroactive changes, and I believe they're at JA 546, 547, and 548, which officially make the four plaintiff, well, three of the four plaintiff appellants detective sergeants in 2007, at the same time they were denying the existence of the position itself.
Well, the district court relied on the Supreme Court's opinion interpreting the statute of limitations under the Federal Labor Standards Act. How do you distinguish that?
Your Honor, the cases that we reviewed in reviewing this issue seem to come down for us to be more on point with the Cook line of cases, the BB line of cases, in which at least for the statute of limitations argument, for the individuals that were within, we believe, were still within the 2 and 3 year statute of limitations based on the record.
But here the statute identified the amount. Is that not correct? So in Cook, there was a study that had to be completed.
Yes, Your Honor.
So those cases are different, aren't they?
And the Cook case goes to two aspects of our case. Cook stands for the proposition on the statute of limitations that the accrual occurs each pay period when the individual should have been paid, and it also stands...
But the district court relied on the Supreme Court decision.
In Unexcel?
Yes, interpreting the statute of limitations.
Yes, I believe that involved the Portal to Portal Act. I believe that in Unexcelled, I believe that the cases are, in Unexcelled, it involved an administrative hearing issue, and I believe that the closest cases I could find on point to this in this particular situation are Cook and Beebe.
All I'm getting at is that in Excel, the court said, a cause of action is created when there's breach of duty owed the plaintiff. It is the breach of duty, not its discovery, that normally is controlling. So the normally word is a qualifier there, all right? So you rely on Cook, which talks about the uncertainty until the report was completed. But here there is no uncertainty, is there? Because of the statutory provision that said your clients were entitled to $595 extra dollars a year.
Your Honor, that's an excellent question. What we had argued below was that the individual officers should be entitled to the compensation because the detective sergeant position continued to be in use. Obviously, the department was not recognizing it. It's a different kind of...
What I'm getting at is here the union filed a grievance.
Yes, Your Honor.
The police chief denied it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your client said they had done the work. They were entitled to the $595.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why, under Unexcelled, didn't the cause of action arise at that point?
Because under Cook and later cases, it continued to arise.
That's a different question. So
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
$595 right. Continued to arise. $595 was $595.
Every year. Your Honor.
Well, if I can separate two different issues. One issue is from 2004 and each year thereafter.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your argument is it arises with each paycheck. I understand that. I take it you also want things going way back before that.
Yes, Your Honor. All
right, so the question is, you knew, so I want to leave aside the year by years from December, from November 2004 on. But as of December 3rd, you knew that you had a cause of action that they were violating because you filed a grievance saying we're entitled to this money and we didn't get it, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So since you knew without doubt as of December 3rd that they were violating the law, in your view, you had 3 years from that date to file at the most, and you didn't with respect to anything that occurred before that date, right?
Well, Your Honor, when we looked at the district court's opinion in dismissing our count number 4, the individuals that are part of this appeal were part of, obviously, the grievance and that went forward to determination of the basic pay. So we believe that in order to get to the Fair Labor Standards Act question, you would first have to establish basic pay under 5.
Why? That you don't cite anything for that proposition other than, I think, Cook, which is, I think, the district court has distinguished. Is there any law to, I mean, you, as Judge Rogers said, there's a statute that says how much you're entitled to. You knew that they had violated that statute. What else do you need to file a claim in federal court? There's no part of a claim in federal court that requires a decision by any administrative agency or anything else, is there?
No, Your Honor. I believe that that's where, for the older claims, our equity arguments come in.
But how do the equity arguments apply after December 03? That is, I understand the arguments that you would make equitably before that. But as of that date, no one was fooling you. No one was tricking you. You knew they were in violation of the law. So you had 3 years from that date to sue, and you didn't.
Well, they continued to utilize detective sergeants. We provided a number of pieces of evidence to that effect. We right. also...
But you didn't believe them. As of December 3rd, you knew that they were violating the law, that your people were detective sergeants and were entitled to the money. So the equity argument is they fooled us, we didn't discover yet, something like that. But that doesn't seem to apply once you know that you have a cause of action.
Well, I mean, the officers, you know, with the case as it was ongoing, believed that they were going to be compensated. They, I mean, there was a whole series of communications. The position doesn't exist. They were told, assuming in 2003, but they continued to work in the position. They continued to, you know, we obtained several documents where they recognized, I believe it's on JA 379, in 2000, in the beginning of 2007, they said, here are our current detective sergeants. You know, they couldn't get any answers. They were going through the process of the of the grievance. The arbitrator found that the misrepresentations by MPD caused detrimental reliance on the arbitration claims, which are different than those here.
Was that finding with respect to post-December 03 misrepresentations or pre-December 03 misrepresentations?
Pre-December.
Right. So you might have a sort of a lulling claim, which is really what you're saying, which in fact the arbitrator found for you, but you don't have that claim with respect to what happened after you filed your grievance, right? At least the arbitrator's not, so you can't get any support from the arbitrator on that point, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So did you make this, the government says that you didn't make these arguments below, that is, you didn't make a lulling or tolling or other sort of equitable claim below, is that right?
But it's not correct, Your Honor. We argued Cook pretty...
Cook, but Cook isn't an equitable, that's not an equitable issue. Did you make the argument that there should be equitable tolling even if there's a violation of the statute of limitations?
That the defendants did something that should toll this.
Right.
We made the argument that, I mean, tolling in the sense that the condition precedent...
That's different.
Yeah, that's different.
No, I understand the condition precedent. You made it, but you didn't make the other one.
No, we did. I mean, we didn't put it in the complaint.
Or in the papers, except to cite what was in the arbitrator's decision.
We did. We made the argument that they were still... No, we didn't.
Okay.
And on that point, Mr. Berry, we have... In Carter against Famata, refused to consider an equitable tolling argument that was raised in the district court, but not until reconsideration. That was too late, as far as we were concerned. In another case, in an unpublished judgment, even more recently, this year, we said because the plaintiff failed to make the equitable tolling argument before the district court, this court need not consider it. Now, it doesn't say we may not consider it, but you've imposed a certain burden on the defendants by raising something for the first time on appeal, namely an appeal that might have been avoided or substantially narrowed had this been raised in a timely fashion. Isn't that also true with regard to your argument that this is a continuing claim? Similarly, a new argument?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I mean, there was a lot of, during the litigation, as you can see from the record, there was a lot of pleadings back and forth, a lot of amendments, but there was, we did make it clear that we had a number, that these positions continued to exist and these people were working these positions. We put in several affidavits saying, hi, we worked from, and those are in the record at, A-139 to A-166, and if I can...
The district court pretty clearly understood you to be making that argument.
Yes, it did.
No one seems to have been surprised. At page 8 of the district court's opinion, it says, plaintiffs respond that they have submitted evidence demonstrating that the petition continues to exist. They also argue that their claims did not accrue until the PERB decision became final in late 2005.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the district court rejected both of those arguments.
Yes, they did, Your Honor.
They're making a somewhat different argument on appeal, no?
Yeah.
That the violation is a continuing one, not because the positions continue to exist, but because each year you're being denied your bump. That's not in there, is it? Or is it? Is that in your argument below?
The part that...
That it's a continuing violation because every year it's renewed? by failing to pay you?
We didn't use those exact words, Your Honor. We did use, in the motions, in the pleadings, in the affidavits, we specified the time periods that where these individuals continued to work.
I understand, but the argument on appeal is about when the claims accrued,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Not tolling or anything like that, but when they accrued. And that, I think, is the new wrinkle.
I mean, principally before the court, our claims were that the condition precedent to the statute of limitations was September 30th, 2005 PERB decision.
And therefore,
as well as,
which would mean that the claim accrued as of then.
Yes.
That's what you are arguing.
Yes.
Now you're arguing something a little different, right, that it continued to accrue.
I believe them to be very similar. It's not exact, no, Your Honor, but
the district court did. I mean, the district court continues on to say that they're contrary to plaintiff's assertions, their claims, I mean, the district court understood when the claims arose. That is, the claims do not arise out of the non-payment of the arbitration award, but instead from the failure to compensate them at the time they allegedly fulfill the responsibilities of detective sergeants. And then they cite from Marson, which cites Excel, a cause of action accrues at the time the FLSA was allegedly violated and overtime payments were allegedly due. So you made the argument that your clients are continuing to serve as detective sergeants, so they're earning overtime and they're not being paid.
Yes, Your Honor.
I guess there is a distinction about the arguments before the district court as to when the cause of action accrued and whether or not you were bringing a claim of a continuing violation.
Yes.
That's all we're pointing out.
No, I understand, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Ms. Berry, your time's expired. I'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I'm James McKay, and I represent the Metropolitan Police Department. The district court was correct in concluding that the officer's claims were barred by the statute of limitations.
McKay, could you focus for me on the 3 years before the date that the suit was filed? Why is it that the failure to pay overtime during each of those years is not within the statute of limitations?
The gravamen of their complaint is that we didn't pay them minimum wage, we didn't timely pay them, we didn't pay them as detective sergeants, and all of those claims accrued when it was made very clear to them in a very formal way by the chief of police on December 29th, 2003, that their claims were not going to be fulfilled, that the position of detective sergeant doesn't exist, and at that point they had sufficient knowledge.
They had knowledge that you weren't going to be following the law in their view, but does that mean that if they today are doing overtime, and in fact the case is that they are detective sergeants, that they don't accrue a new cause of action?
I think that,
because
no,
they announced 4 years ago that they weren't going to pay them?
This is, it all arises from the decision of the chief in December 2003 that
but it isn't arising
not,
from a, the decision of the chief every year that he's not going to pay.
Well, it was a single decision. What happened after that was subsequently they proceeded under the collective bargaining agreement and the CMP, the Comprehensive Merit Personnel Act, to challenge the chief's decision, and they were successful.
I don't know, you're not.
But that.
Let me give you a sharp hypothetical. The chief announces in the year 2000, I am never going to pay a black officer the money he is due.
Well,
this year, that one of those officers who was a black officer at the time and is still a black officer sues. Is he out of time?
No, that's a continuing discrimination. In this case, it's just the effects of a decision.
It's not the, that's the issue of question is, why is it the effects? And actually, I must say I'm perplexed why neither side has cited the Ledbetter case, which seems to not only decide this case, but say specifically that the FLSA is different than Title VII.
Yes, it does say Justice Alito, in passing, did distinguish that, but I don't think that was.
Well, really you might say it's in passing, but it is the majority opinion, and it does say that it's well established that in the FLSA, statute of limitations for violating the minimum wage and overtime provisions runs anew with each paycheck, and that Title VII is different because it requires an intentional discriminatory act. And the distinction that it draws is between a single act, which then mounts up later, and a new act. And so that even if the chief announced these people are not detective sergeants, when in fact they are, I don't really see any reason why they can't continue to sue in this year.
But they're suing for intentional violation of the FLSA.
Well, that's an argument under the third. They're not suing for discrimination. They're suing for a violation.
Well, but they're using the word intentional, and you've got a different statute of limitations. You've got different standards.
That's
a different proof. When you're asking for, you're saying we intentionally violated it. So every year we intentionally violate that. Now that's different.
Does the FLSA require an intentional violation?
No, it doesn't, but they've alleged intentional violation.
Well,
they've
over-alleged. That's not an element of the offense.
Well, it certainly would go, perhaps, to the damages they could get and
Well, maybe it would go to the damages, but that's a different question. They got knocked out altogether.
Well,
the district court could not say, assuming there were no statute of limitations, the district court could not say you lose because you haven't proven intent.
Well,
that's... Isn't that right?
Yes, you're right, Your Honor, but I'm trying to basically say that this passage, the words in passing by Justice Alito, were really the general rule, perhaps, and it really doesn't focus very much on an FLSA claim. It was dicta. It was basically a Title VII claim.
This is exactly what the 11th Circuit presciently decided in 1994 in the Knight case.
Yes.
Right? This is exactly the distinction that the court drew there between a continuing effect. So, in other words, if they were claiming that we only once, we were detective sergeants in the year 2000, we're not detective sergeants now, but our current pay is lower because you failed to pay us in the year 2000. That would be a continuing effects case.
Well, the Knight case, of course, had two classes of firefighters, the officers and the non-officers. And for the non-officers, the court said there was a discrete event. The decision not to give them promotion in 1987 or something was a discrete event, and therefore that started the running of the statute of limitations. That's analogous to the 2003 decision of the chief.
But it was a discrete event because it was the only event, and their argument was that their pay was built on that and continued to go up. Here you have an argument of a new non-payment every time. The argument is not that their pay would be larger now. It's that you're not paying me my $594 this year.
Well,
or whatever the
they
name
are
is.
Being paid, but it's the.
That's what I wanted to be clear about.
Yes.
There's the Federal Labor Standards Act claim, and the plaintiffs also pursued their rights under the collective bargaining agreement, and they have won.
They've won and they've been paid.
And that's one of the questions I had when I was working on this case.
Well,
have they received not only the $595, but the overtime based on that increased compensation to which they were entitled according to the arbitrator, and that decision was affirmed by PERB, and the District of Columbia did not appeal?
Well, Your Honor, as we argued below, and it was in our statement of material facts or our response, the statute, DC Code 54302C, says you're entitled to $595 in addition to your basic pay. It's not part of your basic pay, and therefore it wouldn't be computed in overtime. It would be a $595 like a bonus. You get a $595 bonus.
You're not paying overtime.
So they are not paid.
But there's no right.
I understand your argument, but I thought the arbitrator had ruled that they won and that the city had to pay them based on their compensation that included the 595, so that overtime would be calculated on what you called the bumped-up salary.
I didn't...
Is that correct or incorrect?
I didn't read the arbitrator's decision as doing anything other than saying that you're entitled retroactively to be paid $5.95 a year, and sometimes it was 20 years back, and that's what the arbitrator decided. I'm trying to figure out what it is.
So is the district's position that the only way they can recover overtime is through the federal cause of action?
No, they have a right, and the D.C. Court of Appeals has just made it clear. They have a right to go to PERB if they don't think they're getting sufficiently compensated under the arbitrator and PERB's decision. They can go to PERB and get an enforcement action, have a declaration that it's an unfair labor practice, or go to Superior Court. But the position of the MPD is that they've been paid everything they're due, and that we have complied with the arbitrator's decision, and that. But if they want to, if they don't believe that, they can go to PERB and have PERB enforce it against us. But
the case isn't moot in the sense that what they're asking for here, which is overtime based on the 595, that hasn't been paid. And now your position is they're not entitled to it, right? Their
yes.
position is they are entitled to it, but there's no dispute that it hasn't been paid.
Yes. Yes, but it's like they want to do a piecemeal litigation of this thing. They want to, they have all these overarching claims based on the fact that they were not compensated as detective sergeants in any way, and they filed this action in November 2007, but they've known for almost 4 years that the position of MPD is that they're not entitled to compensation as detective sergeants. At that point, they had enough knowledge that they should have gone to file a suit in a court under the FLSA if they had any claims under that. It was a discrete event. It's analogous to a situation where a city reduces pay, or a city says, no, you're not entitled to sleep pay. I'm talking about the Hendricks and talking about the Aldred cases. It's a discrete event, and it was the district court was correct. Now, I'm using the bright line of December 29, 2003 as the last possible date in which you could argue that their cause of action accrued. But after that, they had 3 years from that date to file suit, and they waited far too long.
The Aldred case alleged a single cause of action, that they were coerced into an agreement at a certain date. That was the claim. And that date was beyond the statute of limitations. That's not what they're claiming here.
Well, but it's analogous.
They're claiming a failure to pay every year.
It's a discrete event. Well, they didn't argue that below. They argued the only legal theory that they advanced below with regard to the statute of limitation was that their cause of action accrued on October 30th, or the next pay period after October 30th, 2005. That is quite a different legal theory than saying that, you know, you have a continuing violation every paycheck. You know, if you analyze that, I guess you could... It doesn't really, it's not the same theory, and it's quite different from saying that the position of detective sergeant still existed. That is not the same as arguing that we have an entitlement that you haven't fulfilled, and that under the statute, that you haven't paid us. I mean, whether or not the detective sergeant position existed, as the district court correctly said, is really irrelevant. It's the real problem. There's a special problem when they wait until the appellate stage to raise new theories, new legal theories that require new facts, new arguments. We were not allowed to or given the opportunity to make arguments before the district court or produce facts.
Can I ask you, in their second amended complaint in paragraph 61, they claim, or they allege, that pursuant to Section 207A, that The district is required to pay individual plaintiffs time and a half compensation for all overtime hours worked in excess of 40 hours per week, depending on their individual periods of time worked as detective sergeant. You see, well, paragraph 61.
Yes, I'm looking at that.
Yeah. And then in 66, they allege defendant's willful failure to pay all overtime wages. That's without limitation to year.
Well,
it's not the same, I agree, as having a separate count alleging a continuing violation. But isn't that language in the complaint broad enough to cover that?
It's not the same. They want to go way back to 20 years back, and that's what they really aimed at. That's the way you would read that. In fact, a lot of them were compensated maybe 20 years back. Some were paid quite a large sum, and it's in the record. If you want to see how much we paid them, if you look at a joint appendix, 380 to 383, you'll see all the money we paid them. And if you look at page 384, we paid them $236,650, which is what we have paid all these detective sergeants. So it's a lot of money we have paid. And
I thought it was agreed by you that they have not received the overtime they claim based on the bumped compensation.
Well, if on page 308 of the joint appendix, we make it very clear that our position is the statute says they're entitled to 595 in addition to basic pay and on the very first line, but not part of basic compensation. It's like a bonus. A bonus doesn't give you a basis for extra. We're talking maybe 28 cents an hour.
But I understand that's your legal argument, but all I'm saying is I thought we agreed you weren't contesting that the case is not moot as to their overtime claims based on what they view as their compensation that you describe as compensation that's been bumped up by this bonus of 595.
Well, our argument is not mootness. Our argument is the statute of limitations, that their cause of action under the FLSA accrued in December 2003 and that they were not they had to file then.
I can just be clear. As the case was pursued in the district court, the claim was that we have been doing this work. We're entitled to the 595. That's count two. And we're also entitled to overtime based on our base compensation plus the 595. That's count three.
Yes.
All right. So that if they had won, and their cause of action had been timely, and they had won, then they wouldn't have, I mean, the case would be moot at this point, assuming the district pursued it.
Right. Now, the problem, you know, under race judicata, you can't just take piecemeal arguments and they, you know.
I'm trying to understand. The suit was filed so that if they had filed timely and they had won, if the district court had ruled in their favor on the merits, then it would have covered their overtime claims going back to 2003 at least.
I guess it would have perhaps covered back to, when they started the position as a detective sergeant, then we would have appealed that. But
no, but the Federal Labor Standards Act only allows you to go back 2 years. So, in any event,
their argument was they were entitled to be compensated for all the years that they were acted as detective sergeants and weren't paid, and they did get that relief from the arbitrator. They went back, as I said, many, many years in some cases, and they got all that relief. Now, we don't know what would happen, how the district court would have decided. Assuming the district court would have agreed with them, we probably would have been the appellant here. But the bottom line is that the district court was correct. The statute of limitations, this is a discrete event, the December 2003. They knew their rights there. They really had to act on them. These new arguments they're raising on appeal are different from the legal theory they have below, which was simply that the arbitrator's award was a condition preceding to their accrual of the cause of action. Their continuing violation action is inconsistent with that and is different, at least, from that. And in any case, the statute of limitations does apply here. This is a discrete event, and we would ask this court to affirm the district court dismissal of the case, unless this court has any further questions.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Barry, give you 1 minute.
Your Honors, I disagree with the bright line approach from December of 2003.
Let me ask you.
Yes, Your Honor.
If your cause of action had been ruled to have been timely filed and you had prevailed in the district court, what you were asking for was the district court to declare that your clients were entitled to $595 every year and they were entitled to get their overtime based on that bumped up annual compensation. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that was the theory of your case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Not these other arguments you're making on appeal.
In other words, you
would have won the whole case had your complaint been timely and you had prevailed.
Your Honor, I believe that the claims about the statute of limitations were recognized by the court, as mentioned in their opinion, and as the documents that we provided in addition to page one of the Honorable District Court's opinion, where they considered everything. I believe that...
But what I'm getting at is I don't find in the record, for example, evidence that you submitted showing how each of your clients had worked for a certain period as a detective sergeant and these number of hours of overtime, and so therefore they were entitled not only back in 2003, but in each continuing year. That's not the nature of the case you were bringing to the district court, was it?
It was. In the affidavits, I believe it's at A139 to A166. And I'll
right. Those are where they say they served. Mm-hmm. But it's not the type of data where the district court could say, I've ruled for you, so you get, I don't know what the amount would be, you know, $3,000 in 2004. One plaintiff gets that. Another plaintiff gets $3,200 in overtime. That's not the nature of the case that was presented to the district court, was it?
We were seeking this to go into two stages. When we moved for summary judgment, we were seeking a determination of liability to be followed by one of accounting. And we figured that a lot of those issues would be sorted out by the judge if we succeeded in our liability claim.
I take it your request was for money for every year from the year you filed the complaint backwards, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So if some part of it was cut off by the statute of limitations, you weren't giving up the whole thing. You were giving up whatever you lost under the statute of limitations.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Barry. Thank you. Appreciate your time.